today we're going to be talking about regenerative health, right? You know, I looked up the definition of regenerative, and it refers to the process of restoring, renewing, or improving a system, organism, or environment to a healthier, more sustainable, and self-sustaining state. Well, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. And we're going to be talking about, you know, I believe it all starts in your head, right? You know, the mind is over our emotions, emotions over actions, actions are results, results are our destiny. Now, why do I start this show with mine? Well, I'm going to tell you this. You know, a lot of you are kind of stuck in your ways. You're stuck thinking this is the way it's been done for generations. This is the way it needs to be done for the future. And you don't leave the possibility open for something completely new to come in. Well, for some of you, what we're going to be talking about today will be completely new, because we're going to be talking about regenerative farming and regenerative health to be able to open you up in a way that you have more vitality, more energy, more power, more passion, more love, more happiness in your life. How would you like to have that? Well, you can have that when we understand how we get that. And we get that, first of all, by opening up ourselves to receive something new. And then secondly, by getting some information that will help you to understand how to become more regenerative in your life and in your not only in your life, but in the lives of your children and everybody else around you. And then what do we need to do with our systems and in our planet so that you can embrace a regenerative mindset? That's what I'm talking about today. I have a very special guest. She's going to, has a brand new book out. It's called From the Ground Up. Her name is Stephanie Anderson. She's going to be here, and we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things that are going to really apply to you and your family today. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back after this break with my guest.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I am here with Stephanie Anderson. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. For those of you that don't know Stephanie, she's the author of From the Ground Up, The Women Revolutionizing Regenerative Agriculture. It's a new press book. Just came out 2024. Her work has appeared in the Rumps, Tri-Quarterly, Flyaway, Hotel America, Terrain.org, The Chronicle Review, Sweet, and many more. She's the winner of the 2020 Margolis Award for Social Justice Journalism. Stephanie is also the co-editor of the University of Nebraska Press, a series on our regenerative future. Her debut nonfiction book, One Size Fits All, A Farm Girl's Search for the Promise of Regenerative Agriculture, earned her a 2020 Nautilus Award. That's amazing. And 2019 Midwest Book Award. She holds an MFA from Florida Atlantic University, where she is an assistant professor of nonfictional work. So welcome, Stephanie. Yeah, you've done a lot in your life. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you got a new book out, and we're going to get to it. But before I get into the details of the book, why did you write the book?
So I grew up on my parents' ranch out in western South Dakota. It's a cattle ranch. So I grew up doing things like, horseback riding, wrangling cattle, fixing fence, all that kind of stuff. So I was involved with agriculture on a personal level. Still love my family farm, and my family very much. So fast forward, I ended up here in Florida, and I wrote my first book while getting my master's degree, and that book, One Size Fits None, it looked at regenerative agriculture from like a philosophical standpoint, sort of like, is it feasible? What is it? It was, movement was very new back then, so I was profiling producers just to kind of introduce that concept to readers. So then, 2020 hit, the pandemic, and it felt like, at least from my perspective, we were really watching the food system collapse. And I wondered, like, well, how is the movement responding? How can we make these scenes not unfold the next time we have a crisis? So I went out and started looking around and talking to people, and I noticed that the regenerative movement is starting to build in that sustainability or and resiliency, and has been for a long time. And what's exciting is that women are really taking a leadership role in this in a way that they haven't in sort of the industrial conventional circles for in similar spaces. So I was very excited about that. So that kind of prompted me to write the book and just look at the food system as a whole.
Well, you know what I love about the book coming out is, we're kind of in a upshift of consciousness in our country today, in the United States, and I believe around the world, where we are really questioning systems that we've used in the past. We've got a revolution, I guess I want to say, and even a revolutionary government in the United States right now, and they're kind of looking at everything, whether you agree with them or not. That's not really the issue. The issue is, they're changing things up. And one of the things that we need to do is change our system around agriculture. We've known this for years. We know that, they're having to use stronger and stronger chemicals on our crops. We know that we're ingesting these chemicals. We know that 60% of the population is obese right now. We also know that we have a health crisis on our hands right now, where I don't know the exact number, but it's a majority of people have chronic illness in this country. And a lot of that is coming from what we put in our mouth, and a lot of that's coming from what we what, you know, how that's been raised. So I think your book is timely, and I think we need to regenerate our systems in agriculture. Sorry to go out of my little rant, but I just really think that you're at the right place at the right time. For those that don't know a regenerative agriculture and they haven't really heard about it, can you define that for us, Stephanie?
So regenerative refers to a set of farming and ranching practices that really rely on key principles of sustainability and holistic thinking. So the definition will change a little bit depending on your environment, but there are commonalities. So things like keeping the soil covered, minimizing disturbance, and using disturbance in a positive manner, like for example, putting livestock on the land to have a positive disturbance, to reduce and eliminate when possible agrochemical use, to increase diversity on the land in terms of crops. So these are just a few of the regenerative practices that move beyond sustainability. Like regenerative is organic plus plus plus. It is not just sustaining a degraded resource, it is rebuilding health and bringing that health, increasing that health, whether it's water cycles, it's nutrients in the soil, it is the health of the biodiversity, in the surrounding areas of the farm. So it's a model that increases health in so many ways. And the exciting thing is, as you mentioned, it improves the health of the end user, which is us, the consumer.
Well, I'm envisioning regenerative farming with small to medium size, at least that's a start. Small to medium size farms out there. Am I right on that? Am I off with that? Is that where we start? Where do we start with this?
I think it needs to be an all hands on deck approach when it comes to this movement. Our agricultural system is too top heavy right now. We have too few large farms producing way too much of what we eat. So it would be great if those farms adopted regenerative agriculture, of course. But what I think we need more is a stronger mid-size section of our farming industry. We need to have more mid-sized farmers and ranchers who have enough size to, be very well profitable, but also be very productive and form more of the basis for where our food actually comes from. So yes, absolutely. Small farms are a great place for regenerative. It's a natural fit, but we know it can scale. We know it can scale to large farms. And we know that mid-sized farms are even better positioned to adapt that. They're often run by families who can make that transition.
Well, you know, we're in a new world, right? We're coming into AI. We're coming into, we're in a place where you basically get satellite coverage anywhere for your phone, your internet, what have you. And I believe we're on the verge of a wave of people just massively moving out of cities back into farms. That's just my head. I just think that we're at a place where we need to do that. And regenerative farming seems to be a way to go. I think what I need to do is take a quick break. But when I get back, I want to talk to you a little bit about regenerative farming versus organic farming. What's the difference there is, I buy a lot of organic food and, should I be looking for something else? So we will reach that when we get back.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call, so please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and I'll be right back with my amazing guest, Stephanie Anderson, in just a moment. I want to reach out to you guys and let everybody know that you can subscribe to our YouTube channel there. And if you subscribe, you won't miss any of our shows, plus you'll be able to pass them on to people that you care about and love. So I hope you'll check that out. All right, back to my guest, Stephanie Anderson. Hey, Stephanie. Okay, organic versus regenerative. One and the same, something different? What is that?
I'm glad you asked that question because as a consumer, it can be hard to know. So organic is, a very formalized system. We have USDA rules that outline exactly what organic is in terms of the practices that farmers can use. So over the years, unfortunately, these rules have become eroded, through political pressure, lobbying by big food companies to make them weaker. And so we have things that are still qualified as organic practices that wouldn't be regenerative practices. So I'll give you an example. Raising animals, livestock, whether it's chickens, hogs, cattle, in a confined mega feedlot type environment or, chicken house environment, for example, that is still allowed under the organic rules, as long as those animals are fed organic feed and they meet the other requirements. That's not a regenerative practice. That does not improve soil health. It's not using the livestock as part of the ecosystem. It's separating them. And there's a whole host of problems, with confined animal operations. So it is the health of the animal being one, and the nutritional quality of the meat that comes out of the place like that another. So that's just one example to put it really quickly. But regenerative is building from the principles of organic, especially the principles and philosophies that were part of the early movement and probably the people who started it wanted it to look like. But it's going to be making sure that there's greater focus on all kinds of elements that have been lost in the organic rules of today.
I don't think a lot of people know that. I think a lot of people just think organic is the next level up. And by the way, it's probably the next level up for a lot of you, that are just buying processed foods that have a lot of GMOs. They have a lot of chemicals. They have a lot of things you don't want to eat in them. Organic's the next step up. But there's something higher, and that's what we're talking about here. It's regenerative processes. Now, there's nothing wrong with organic. I mean, there are, like Stephanie just said, if you're buying eggs, it says organic or pasture raised. I know I'm buying pasture raised. Why am I buying pasture raised? Because they're free. They're not necessarily free range. But they're out. They are out. They can run around, you know, and do whatever they, you know, they're like in nature, right? So anyway, 70 has a new book out. You all want to know about this. It's called From the Ground Up, The Women Revolutionizing Regenerative Agriculture. All right, Stephanie, women. Why the women? Why are the women leading the way here? What's going on?
Yeah, this was something I wasn't expecting when I went out to look at the movement. But every time I went out into the field, metaphorically and physically speaking, people were, and I was asking who's doing what, you know, who would you recommend I speak to? It was very often women. And I came away with a picture of a movement that is, you know, not that men aren't in it, that men are not part of it, and that very well should be. But women are taking a leadership role and really embracing that in a way that, you know, the conventional industrial system, we don't see quite as often, or that they have been in that system and their work has been, you know, maybe marginalized or not focused on, especially farm work when it comes to that. So I just found that whenever I was looking for a mover and shaker, it often tended to be a woman. And the data supports that. We see that there are more women farmers, according to the last USDA census. And we see that, you know, in the corporate leadership roles as well, that more women are taking those on. You know, whether it's policy or research or what have you. So it was just exciting to me. And you know, women have been kind of invisible in agriculture for a long time. So I wanted to make sure that this time around, when this movement was happening, they were getting the credit that they deserved.
I love that. So in the book, From the Ground Up, are there stories that all about the women? You got any guys in there? Just saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it is each chapter profiles a different way that a woman, a producer or a leader rather, is working to change the food system. So it does start with like a larger producer, you know, a cattle operation, most like a mother-daughter duo and working on a relatively smaller farm, but feeding their local community in a significant way. And it kind of moves up through the food chain through distribution, advocacy, research, policy. Even an urban producer or a woman leader working on bringing together multi-farm CSAs to meet urban customers' needs. And so to answer your question, yes, there are a couple of men featured in here, specifically one who is relying on his local research expert through the Extension Service, who happened to be a woman profiled, and she's been doing that work for a long time, to help transition a very conventional corn and soy rotation operation over to a regenerative. So he was talking about that transition for him and what that meant. It was a big mindset change for him and his family. But what made the difference was having his local person there to help him. And that person happened to be a very, very knowledgeable woman in a position of leadership to help him do that.
Well, you know, all change starts with, first of all, opening your mind. Second of all, like I said in the beginning, is to get some different information. I think the information needs to be inspiring, too, which is why I love your book. You've done the research, plus you got inspiring stories in here. When somebody reads the book, Stephanie, what do you think they'll walk away with?
Well, first, I want them to walk away with hope, because I do think that there is a lot of hope in the movement. And that it's making significant changes, that it's scalable and it's feasible. We need to just kind of take the collective will and action to make it happen. Second of all, for women readers, I hope they see themselves in the pages, whether they're on the land or wanting to work in some other element of our society, you know, financing, you know, policy work, those things can all be part of this regenerative movement. But also I just hope people enjoy the stories, because, you know, I'm a storyteller at heart. The book is very narrative driven, as you mentioned, and features those stories. And I just feel like that's where that inspiration can lie, you know, backed up by research, of course. But, you know, I hope that it would be a read that people enjoy very much.
That's awesome. People can get it on Amazon or where books are sold. Is that accurate?
That is. People can get it on Amazon. I always encourage people to go to their local bookstore, just ask for them to order it, and they will. So support your local folks, but you can also get it online at various retailers too.
You know, when I drive around Southern California, right, I see lawns everywhere, these big lawns, massive lawns everywhere, right? They're all filled with, you know, they're watering these lawns, you know, they look pretty, but it seems like a waste of beautiful agricultural space to me. Can people like, you know, get your book, read about it, get inspired, and maybe, you know, turn some of their property into a mini, regenerative land, you know, farm.
I mean, I certainly wouldn't discourage that. I think that could be a really fun thing to do. And I've done myself, my home as well. But, you know, I don't provide a lot of like gardening know-how, but I do kind of provide the reasoning for why one would want to do that. So I would hope that, you know, people would find that a cool way to take it into their daily lives beyond, you know, maybe changing up what they shop for or being able to spend a little more of their food dollars in their local and regional communities, things like boating and just getting involved with the movement too. So, but yeah, people should share that if they just feel so moved, you know, to convert that land. And I will say that absolutely. I mean, it never used to be outside the norm for people to have that backyard, front yard garden. And that could make up a major part of our food supply and really reduce our carbon footprint when it comes to what we eat. So I love that.
It really could. Yes, I could see you doing crop rotation with your neighbors. I mean, you know, we could get creative with this, you know, and I believe in the world that's coming, it's going to be more important than ever to really cooperate with one another, cooperate with nature, cooperate with our environments, and cooperate with our, in my world, your soul, right? You got to know what's going on inside. All right. So listen, you know, the women are moving, you know, they're moving this narrative. And I'm wondering, because of that, how's that narrative moving forward with the women moving it? Yeah, I know you touched on a little bit, but I want you to go a little deeper with that.
Yeah. What makes women leaders so interesting in this movement to me is the way that women tend to lead. And so I reference, you know, data that's been collected on women's leadership styles. And when that's applied to something like regenerative agriculture, it results in a more holistic type of view, taking a more long-term approach to how farming practices reverberate across time, affect future generations and, you know, the planet in the future as well. And also taking into account more concerns like how does our farming result in nutritionally dense food, for our children, for our society? How does it improve health in a measurable way? How does it promote social justice by allowing more consumers or more producers to come back to the land, particularly producers of color, historically marginalized producers? How does it benefit our environment to the well-being of all of us? And how can we have, bring back and revitalize our rural communities that have been so decimated by conventional industrial agriculture? So women are coming to the movement with these kinds of thought processes and ways of thinking. And that's, I think, a major strength of it, rather than taking a just kind of profit per acre or spreadsheets profit type approach to this, because profit and well-being go so much deeper. They're really more complex than that. And women, not that men can't do that again, but women are often uniquely gifted at that.
Yeah. Well, listen, a lot of people are digging their graves with the food that they put in their bodies, but they're unconscious of it. They don't realize it. So when we get back from this break, I want to take a little deeper dive into what we are consuming, what the mindset has to be to change that up, and how the regenerative movement is part of that. So we will be right back after this break.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Again, I'll be right back with my guest, Stephanie Anderson. And this is a fascinating interview. I hope you're all enjoying it as much as I am. I want to let you know that it's important to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you don't miss any shows. I think even more important is, you know, on this show, I always talk about service, being service to others. When you subscribe to our YouTube channel, you'll be able to share this with other people. And that's how we all grow and learn and evolve together. So I hope you do that. All righty. So back to my guest, Stephanie. You know, this, like I said, you know, it's an amazing conversation. I'm really enjoying it. It's very informative and very enlightening. I believe our audience is loving this too, Stephanie. All right. So, you know, the way we grow and consume food, okay, I believe we have to shake it up at the roots. And that's what we're talking about here. But I think we have to change some minds in the process. So, you know, how do we grow and consume? How do we change that mindset to grow and consume food in a higher level, I guess is the word.
Yeah. I think it kind of starts with from two directions. One, from the producers themselves, and actually think of it as raising food rather than raising commodities or raising sort of products that go into the food supply. Like, these are things that are going to go to your neighbors, that are going to go to people that you may have to face, that people, you know, it's going food for people, not just for the CAFO system, for ethanol, for processed foods. And so measuring the success in terms of the nutrient density of the products coming off your farm, that's a way to start reorienting how we produce it with from a health perspective. And then I also think that, you know, consumers should be more aware of that as well. You mentioned processed foods, you know, and organic and even a regenerative processed food is still processed. You know, and that can still be harmful depending on what it is. You know, organic palm oil is no better for you, or regenerative palm oil is no better for you than just conventional. But to your point, we can look at food and from a nutrient dense perspective. And so we have the science that will allow us to measure actual nutrient quality and quantity in our food. And so as we bring that information to consumers, and I hope that we are able to do that in a clear way, especially food companies within their packaging, will be able to convey that information to consumers so they can make better choices. You know, our food panel, the nutrition panel, it only captures a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what's actually in food, like the phyto compounds, the nutrients that we are even know exist, and even the ones that we don't are probably even more vital to our health. So as that science comes out there, we already know that regenerative tends to produce more nutrient dense and foods that are going to give us that nutrition that we need compared to their industrial conventional counterparts.
That's good. Well, I know when I go to the store and I look on a label, because I read labels all the time, and I see something on the label that I don't know what it is. So I take out my little phone here, you know, and I look, I use ChatGPT or one of the other AI apps. And I just speak into it, the name of that chemical. And then I find out what the side effects are. So I know what I'm putting in my body. And I think we really need to start educating ourselves more and more, because these processed foods, you know, it appears that a lot of the processed foods are contributing to our health challenges around the world, especially in America. They're definite contribution and link to obesity, and all the health issues that come with that. So this is an important piece that Stephanie brought up, and I hope everybody pays attention to it. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we can put out this information and people will say, well, yeah, that's good information, but they don't necessarily take action around it. So today, I just want to encourage my audience, you know, the first action on Steph I'd like you to take is go get Stephanie's book From the Ground Up. It's going to inspire you to understand and educate yourself more about what's going on out there, what's possible for our regeneration of our land. Now, you may say to yourself, well, I'm not going to own a farm. So what? Get the information anyway so you can support the farmers that are doing this, support people that you love that might want to start buying regenerative, okay, and learn about it. That's what I encourage my audience to do. Now, hey, Stephanie, so is there any product, any associations or we don't have to go company names, but associations, or how do we know something's a regenerative product if we're in our supermarket? Is there any way to tell?
Yeah, so that is still being developed, but we do have that in its early stages from the Rodale Institute. They have a certification process that they're moving forward. And so we can see regenerative labels on items in the grocery store. I think a lot of your audience could go to a place like Whole Foods and see regenerative on that, whether it's from a certification like Rodale, or we'll see it on packaging too. It's just becoming very popular. So that certification process, in my opinion, is really important to just kind of keep the integrity of regenerative so that producers don't, no one can just put regenerative on a package and call it that when it's not. So that's getting processed and getting formalized into the system. And producers, you know, are working on it from their end as well to kind of have input in that. But on the other side, meanwhile, consumers, when you're not at the grocery store, maybe when you're out shopping at your local farmer's market, you can simply talk to your farmers about their practices and you can get a sense of whether they're relying on regenerative practices or not. So that's kind of another way when you're working at the local level.
Yeah, we definitely don't want regenerative to go down the path of natural, right? Because when I see natural, it's a red flag. I go, oops, better read that package because natural is not what most people think. Okay. Well, you know what? What comes to my mind is what keeps you motivated to keep moving on these great challenges? We're talking systemic challenges that are pretty big out there.
Yeah, some days are harder than others, but for me, it just goes back to, you know, my family. My family is on the land. They are in this. It's my father, it's my brother, my mom, my family's there. So it's very important to me, like having that personal connection motivates me to keep interested in these issues. But also, I just really care about producers in general. I care about the health of the people in this country and others who eat the food that comes from the producers of this country. And, we're in a climate emergency. We have no choice. We're running out of time when it comes to making this transition in order to shore up our food supply, but also to make sure our food supply, our farmers can survive these next few decades of very volatile changing conditions. So, yeah, I keep at it because I don't feel like I have a choice, I guess.
Well, you know, we're at the precipice of an upshift in consciousness, and we can create a very bright future for ourselves, or we can create nightmares for ourselves. And, you know, we'll either create a sustainable society or we won't have a society. Things are changing. So this is really important conversation we're having. And I think that what you just said, you know, you've got roots. You've got roots. We all have roots, you know, to the agriculture, to what we put in our bodies. And I believe that there's a piece to this that we haven't touched on, which is kind of the political piece to this. What my audience can do to talk to their representatives, how do they talk to them about regenerative farming? What do they say? If somebody goes, you know what, what Stephanie's talking about, we need in this world, and I need to talk to my representative, what are the questions I should ask him, or what are the bills I should support? What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. I view regenerative as one very important step, but just one of many that we need to take from a political standpoint and a policy standpoint to address climate change. So I would frame it, you know, even if you're working in an environment where your representatives are not representing an agricultural area, may not have a great deal of familiarity with that in general, we can fold it into the larger issue of climate. But I will say too, another way in is that regenerative, even though it is based in agriculture, this philosophy addresses so many other social issues that we have. It's a way to check a lot of boxes, so to speak. So, you know, it brings more producers to the land because we can have smaller operations that are as or if not more profitable than conventional. So we can revitalize our rural communities, which we know are suffering. We can bring producers of color back to the land who've been discriminated against after years of systemic discrimination within USDA. We can bring more health to the land when it comes to our ecological, the ecological health of our land by incorporating farming into that rather than farming against nature. So our systems that we all enjoy that bring us clean air, clean water, stay clean. And we also, of course, from a nutrition perspective. So that's another way that to talk about, childhood nutrition or just general health of our society. So there's lots of ways you can talk to your political representatives about this, and regenerative being one way to help address issues that you care about.
I love that. Well, you know, I go to my grocery store and I see, I don't know, maybe there's 7-8 varieties of apples. I think I looked it up once. I forgot how many different types of apples are in the world, but it's hundreds. And I'm wondering, you know, with that diversity piece, right? I just think we as consumers need to start waking up and going, hey, wait a second. You know, you're getting the same apples with the same chemicals, and now you got even your organic products are being sprayed with a peel, which, quote, lasts longer. But, you know, what happens is you bite into the avocado that has a peel on it, or an apple that's sat in the grocery store forever. And sure, the outside didn't deteriorate, but the inside's rotten. So, you know, we need to look at diversity. We need to get some of these chemicals out of our system. And we need to get into what Stephanie is talking about, regenerative agriculture. That's the name of the game. Stephanie, what are the steps that some of the audience can take today to move in this, change their mindset and move into a regenerative mindset?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most obvious way to start that process is to think about what it is you're putting in your body, as you've mentioned, and to think about that as a process. You don't have to flip the switch overnight to change the way you eat, but start bringing in new products, hopefully regenerative products, locally grown products, regionally grown products into your diet in a gradual way, in a way that reflects what you can afford and what you're able to do. And so being aware of that, minimizing processed foods wherever possible. That's a great way to kind of, you know, if we reduce the demand for that, that is a great thing. Food companies will respond. But beyond that, regenerative, like you said, in the mindset. So what are we doing to make sure that our actions are going to reverberate in a positive way? So, I think that comes down to voting. I think that comes down to making our choices for ourselves and our families, and being vocal about that. So I think those are a couple of things that people can do right now.
I love it. You know, it's interesting. You've been out there, you got your book out there, you've been talking to people, you did a lot of research. What is it that stops people from saying yes to regenerative?
Yeah. So from a consumer from a producer perspective, producers are caught between a rock and a hard place. So many of them are really good people. They're not the enemy here at all, but they're in a system designed for, in conventional production. The USDA has basically forced this upon them and enticed them through programs. And when they don't comply, they're not able to get insurance products or funding or markets for their goods. So that's a huge barrier. We need to create those markets for them. We need to change the policy platforms that we have that will incentivize regenerative and help them make the transition that's gradual for them, that's sustainable and is going to be long-term feasible for them. And then also, just mindset. When farmers have been doing something one way for, several generations, it can be tough to change, especially if our farmers are reaching the end of their farming career. It can seem, and I understand why it would be a pretty big risk to change up the way you do things at that stage. But regenerative, taking the long-term view, what's best for your family farm? What's going to help it survive long-term? In a changing climate in particular, I hope that farmers will make that change, for the benefit of their daughters and sons who want to run the operation after them.
Well, you're optimistic about that change from them. I think what's going to happen is we're going to have a whole new group of farmers coming in. I believe that the city folks are going to move out more and more, looking for alternative ways. The young people are going to look for alternative ways to generate their life, whether it's might be buying a small farm or whether it's learning how to grow sustainable products in their backyard. But things are going to change up. That's what I know. I also believe that we need to get government out of agriculture the way it's been in. It is overregulated. I think you just made a good point. It's overregulating our small farms, our medium farms. It's passed a lot of laws to support the major farms out there that made the big farming industry, and the challenge is the results they're getting. See, I'm a guy that looks for results, okay? And we're not getting the right results from our agriculture right now. Just look at the health of the country. You can see the results that we're getting with spraying chemicals on all of our foods, with non-regenerative practices. With the way that we, have limited the amount of types of foods that we even eat, right? Three forms of broccoli, five forms of cauliflower, 10 apples, there's variety, there's diversity all over this planet. We need to step up and learn and grow and get out of these old systemic way. So Stephanie's really, I think you're more of a systems analyst than anything else. I think you've looked at the systems and going, this stuff isn't working. This is breaking down. Look at what we're doing to our kids, our society. It's terrible. So, that's what I'm getting. And, this book of yours that you got out there from the ground up, I'm going to put it up on screen again because my audience really will benefit by reading it. And, I hope they'll get it from me. Stephanie, one thought about the book, what surprised you, like blew your mind? Okay. Like, when you did this research out there and you found like, oh my gosh, this is going on. What was that?
Yeah. So I was thinking, and I got this example from one of my sources, so I can't say it's mine, but when she explained it to me, it blew my mind. So think of a French fry, right? You think potatoes, oil, salt. That's it. Not too bad, right? Well, the potatoes are most likely genetically modified. So there's that. They've been managed with chemicals. When it comes time to harvest the potatoes, they go through a process called desiccation. And not to get too technical, but that means that the farmers, in order to just have more control over when they're harvesting and to have less quote unquote trash in the field, they'll spray those potato vines, and sort of kill them down so that they make the potatoes easier to harvest. So that's a chemical application right before harvest on that potato. And potatoes actually will take that chemical it's a process that they will bring that into their root. And that root happens to be exactly what we eat. So that's going into the potato right before it's harvested. Then it goes to the place, the fast food restaurant where it's dunked in, soybean oil or maybe a palm oil sourced from somewhere else. But a soybean genetically modified, oil that's going in there. It's going into a container that has PFAS that is going to be getting into that as well, and leaching chemicals. So that whole idea of the very innocent French fry to me was just completely destroyed. Not that I thought they were super innocent to begin with, but from a health perspective, but I at least thought it was only three ingredients. And that may be technically true, but the process is pretty questionable.
Yeah, it's very questionable. I remember the movie Supersize It, where the guy took out the French fries. I don't know, it was a year later, and they're still You know, they're still looking exactly like they were when they came out of the oven. They're like, oh, what preservative is in those? Interesting. Well, we know that the body doesn't do well with preservatives. The body doesn't do well with many of these chemicals that are not, they don't just kill the bugs. They go into the food, and I believe they're killing a lot of us. That's what I believe. You know, you can do your own research, but I've done mine, and I see the facts, I see the results, and it doesn't take a genius to look at the results of the health, and you know, so many diseases and so many names for all these diseases, right? Well, we don't need to name any more diseases. We got plenty of names. What we need to do now is we need to start understanding how to cure what ails us, right? And a lot of what ails us is what Stephanie and I have been talking about today. You know, it's what you're putting in your food, it's what you're putting in your body, and it's what's trying to regenerate your cells but isn't doing a good job because there's not the right nutrients or nutrition, no minerals, no, you know, it's just lack. You're just putting in dead food. You know, Stephanie, I hope someday we have the technology, and I know we will, the technology to shine a light on the food, and you can see the density of nutrition, you can see the vibrational, how much energy it gives off, and we can go, you can take that to the shopping mall and go, oh, these are dead apples, this is a dead potato, this has got chemicals in it. I know it'll come, it's going to come, we will have that. I think AI will help us develop things like that. So, but until then, go get her book. Any final thoughts, Stephanie?
No, I just want to give your readers or your listeners and, you know, your audience just a chance to, you know, and be empowered and feel hopeful. So I hope that they will, you know, take this conversation and what's offered in the book and run with it and, you know, and enjoy it most of all. So thank you so much for letting me share. I appreciate that.
It's been a pleasure. I love having you here, and this is a really informative show. I really appreciate it. And you know, I think there's one last piece I'm going to leave the audience with, Stephanie, and that is, you know, let go of the way that you've been thinking if it doesn't work for you. Okay, it's all about results. You know, once you let go, you say there's a new possibility. I'm choosing health. I'm choosing a different lifestyle. Then you educate yourself. You go get books like Stephanie's, and then you take action around it, and you can pretty much change everything. There's hope for everybody. There's hope for our humanity, for our planet, for everything, but we all have to come together and start upshifting our consciousness and getting the information that we need to take it to the next level. Stephanie, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank all of you for joining us today. It's been my pleasure to serve as your host. Take care.